Will Italy have its first female prime minister? A right-wing coalition led by Giorgia Meloni is set to take a majority of seats in parliament. That'll pave the way for the country's first far-right government since World War II. So what will that mean for Italy and Europe? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Hazem Seacup. Italy appears to be on course to elect its first female prime minister and first far-right leader since Benito Mussolini. The coalition will be led by Giorgia Meloni, who's credited with giving her party the meteoric rise it needed to win a national election. Analysts say her uncompromising attitude has struck a chord with a frustrated electorate who see Meloni as the only political option left untested. Meloni said voters gave her a clear mandate to govern and she will lead for all Italians. The election had a record low turnout of 64%. That was down 8% from the previous election in 2018. For more on this, we have a report from Stephanie Decker in Rome.
As predicted, the night went to the right. And Giorgia Meloni wasted no time in addressing her supporters and Italy.
When this night is over, we will remember that this is a new beginning. From tomorrow on, we will have to show what our values are worth. If we are called to govern and lead this nation, we will do it for every single Italian with the goal to unite these people. Because our biggest goal in life is to make sure that Italians are finally proud again, to fly our flag high.
Polls opened at 7 a.m. All in all, 16 hours of voting.
There's been a steady stream of people coming to vote throughout the day despite the rain. And even though most people are not telling us who they voted for, what is clear is that opinions are very strong on both sides.
I'm voting because it's a duty and a right that we finally can express. We don't have many rights left, so I will vote in the hope that Italy will come out of this swamp in which we are stuck. I'm hoping for change, for a really big change, because we really need it.
I'm terrified that there will be changes, because what's happening is really an earthquake, in my opinion.
It's been a divisive election, not only raising questions of what will change inside Italy, but how Italy will present itself abroad.
The main challenge eventually for Meloni as prime minister would be to be accepted by the main European countries as a credible and reliable partner. Otherwise, if things will go wrong or if Meloni will push too hard on her far-right agenda, well, there might be, of course, very soon some problems for Italian political stability, Italian economy, and as well relationship with the EU might be troubling.
There will be weeks for political consultations and appointments before the Italian president Sergio Mattarella appoints a prime minister. But that seems to be all but a formality. Giorgia Meloni is set to be Italy's first female prime minister. The question then, what will her Italy look like? Stephanie Decker, Al Jazeera, Rome.
Well, so who exactly is Giorgia Meloni? Well, she grew up in Rome and has been in politics since the age of 15. Now 45, she's been the head of the far-right Brothers of Italy party for 8 years. She's credited with helping it gain national support by pledging to reduce taxes, promote Italy's standing in the EU, and continue supporting sanctions against Russia. But her hardline views on immigration and what she calls the preservation of the Christian family have raised fears of a return to controversial policies. Well, let's bring in our guest now. Joining us via Skype from Rome is Cecilia Emma Sottilotta. She is Assistant Professor of International Relations and Global Politics at the American University of Rome. Joining us via Skype from Brussels is Peter Klepper. He is Editor-in-Chief at the BrusselsReport.eu. And joining us from Paola is Andrea Mamone, a historian at Sapienza University in Rome. A warm welcome to all of you. So, Cecilia, if I could start with you. What are Italians hoping to get from Giorgia Meloni then, particularly on the economic issues?
I think that the main issue that Giorgia Meloni will need to tackle is the cost of living crisis. The Italian electorate has been very much dissatisfied with traditional parties over the past few years. And probably the excellent result that Giorgia Meloni obtained in yesterday's election was also sort of caused by and helped by this dissatisfaction. So now it's the time for her to deliver, I guess, on electoral promises.
Andrea, do you think she will have much scope to put many of the ideas she wants into practice against this backdrop of the economic problems that were mentioned there, energy shortages, inflation, a looming recession possibly, and the war in Ukraine?
Well, I don't know what she will be able to deliver, honestly, because what we have seen, as usual, in the electoral campaign is lots of propaganda from the majority of parties and coalition. I'm 100% sure that she will make life much harder for immigrants, for example, in Italy. And also there will be some issues in terms of civil rights, social rights, especially I'm talking about the LGBT community, but also the rights for abortion for women. In terms of international politics, I mean, she claimed all over the campaign also to reassure the international partners that she will be backing Ukraine, the European Union, and NATO, so the transatlantic alliance with the United States. I think that she will try to do so as much as possible, but clashes are possible. We have seen that not necessarily far-right parties joining a governmental coalition or leading a governmental coalition, they moderate themselves. The last election, we had a government with a league led by Matteo Salvini, which didn't moderate. There was a radicalization of such cabinet, leading to clashes with other European countries for the refugees and migrants coming to Italy.
Let's broaden this out then, talk about Italy's dealings with the European Union. Peter Klepper, it's been said by one of Ms. Meloni's opponents that the European Union will lose an engine and acquire a break with Giorgia Meloni. Do you think that's true? Or is she, I mean, do you think expect things to be contentious, or is she going to have to make some compromises?
Well, it depends what you're talking about. It's clear that Meloni is very keen on the European funds that will flow from the EU's COVID recovery fund. Of course, she wants to spend it to different things that the preceding government was going to spend it on. But I think when it comes to that, Meloni is not going to rock the boat. She likes that money. However, when it comes to things like immigration, Meloni is definitely not going to sign up to the plans that some of the European commissioners have in mind for immigration. She actually wants to follow the Danish and the British model to sort of end the migration chaos that we see. And of course, to do that, she's looking at, outsourcing asylum processing. I think people should understand that this is actually in itself unrelated to whether you want less or more migration. It is basically a way to make sure that migrants can only enter the territory after they have received a yes. And it's very interesting to see also Italy now likely to pursue that course.
Cecilia, do you think this government led by Meloni, as expected, is going to have to make some compromises? I mean, she's already sounded conciliatory in her victory speech. So what do you expect there?
Yes, absolutely. I really think that her top priority right now is going to be to reassure both the Italian public and Italy's partners in terms of foreign policy. So just to add something to what previous speakers were saying about the European Union, I expect Giorgia Meloni to be very compliant when it comes to, for instance, finances. Italy has a huge amount of government debt. We all know that. We're talking about 150% of GDP. And she's very well aware, she's very aware of the constraints that come with being members of the Eurozone. And she already changed her rhetoric during the campaign. I mean, it was easy for her when she was in the opposition to be very critical of Mario Draghi's cabinet and the European Union. But we noticed a shift in her rhetoric as the campaign proceeded towards much, much softer, conciliatory sort of tones vis-a-vis the European Union. So I think she's going to make some compromises, for sure.
Yeah, let's put that point then to Andrea about the sort of the change in tone. Because it kind of begs the question of what does Giorgia Meloni truly believe. I mean, she represents this party that has its roots in Italian fascism, and yet she has kind of softened her tone on a number of issues. What do you make of that?
She had to, because, I mean, naturally, when she released that video, the video talking about fascism, which in reality she was not saying. I mean, she said that, you know, fascism was an evil in terms of being a dictatorship and so on, but she never said that Mussolini has been the worst prime minister in Italy and a dictator and something terrible for the country. So she had to change the tone, and she had to reassure the international partners. But this is a far-right party, 100% far-right party. All the policy...
Are you suggesting the change in tone is not genuine on her part?
Because, if you want
it's purely political.
Yes, but, I mean, all this is... I mean, if we look at, for example, the immigration side, which is something that she has touched upon, I mean, this is xenophobic, this is far-right. Also, the approach that she had towards the European Union just before the electoral campaign, it was very controversial. I mean, we shouldn't forget that the previous program of the party, of the coalition, was highly critical of the European Union. So she knew that she was going to win because surveys were clear on that. But I don't really believe that there has been a change in what the party really believes in terms of protecting the nation, protecting Christian values within the nation, being against, for example, same-sex marriages, being against, as I said before, immigration, and all these type of issues which are similar to other far-right nationalist parties across Europe and the West. So, I mean, it's simply trying to present the party in a different way. But, I mean, the reality, the core of the party is still neo-fascist and 100% far-right.
Peter Klepper, what comparisons would you draw then between this far-right movement in Italy, the Brothers of Italy, and elsewhere in Europe? Because we saw another election in Sweden a couple of weeks ago in which a far-right party there did very well and is now going to be a major part of the next government there. How do they compare? How do the Brothers of Italy compare with them and with this far-right wave of populism that swept across parts of Europe?
Well, it's a very interesting question, because I think in both cases, both in Sweden and Italy, you can see very dodgy, dirty origins. Say, the fascist, post-fascist movement in Italy is clearly linked with her party. In Sweden, the Sweden Democrats were started by skinheads, really, by national socialists. But I do think in both cases, I mean, there are objective changes in official policy stances. Certainly in Sweden, I think, the party is, I think, slightly populist, but it's very close to the center-right. I guess it also depends which politician you're talking about. If you listen to Meloni, for example, on Russia, I mean, she herself has also changed her stance. She has, congratulated Putin back in 2014 for conquering Crimea and also congratulated him with his quote-unquote election. But now she has been very solidly in favor of Ukraine this year. So I think that's also undeniable. And this is, I think... typical for wider trend of these kind of anti-establishment parties across Europe. that they feel that in order to get to power, they have to abandon some of their, you know, bad luggage, so to speak. And in itself, that's, you know, that's of course a welcome development. You know, it's good that parties that were holding more authoritarian opinions are abandoning those. But obviously, we'll have to see in practice whether they stick to those. I do think that in the case of Meloni, when it comes to Russia, she will. Let's not forget that it's not only in Italy, but also in France and Germany, where politicians have been a lot more careful when it comes to the sanctions, for example. And itself, it's normal. You know, it's good that with, among European democracy, if you have a healthy, healthy debate. But ultimately, you know, there was a united front against the Russian aggression. And I personally think in the end, also Italy will stick with the European alliance and the Western alliance on this topic.
Now, as with all Italian governments or recent Italian governments, she's not going to be able to govern on her own, Sicily. She's got a former coalition with Matteo Salvini's League and Berlusconi's Forza Italia party. And it's been reported that there are some internal tensions there. There was this tape of Salvini making some disparaging remarks about her, and it's been rumoured that Berlusconi doesn't get along with her either. How difficult is that going to be to keep the strands of that coalition together?
This is the big question that everybody's asking, right? How long will this coalition survive? Now, we have to consider that Italy hasn't really turned right in the sense that Meloni didn't really steal votes from the left. The transfers of votes have been mostly internal to the coalition. Actually, Matteo Salvini gave a press conference a few hours ago, and it was pretty livid because his party had lost a lot. And had lost a lot to Meloni's party. So he was obviously like trying to say that they are absolutely, they are a solid majority, the solid coalition that are going to rule the country for 5 years. They're aligned, but many questions by the journalists were pointing to his possible regrets or perhaps problems with the fact that Meloni did better than him. So I would say that the first obstacle will be a disgruntled Matteo Salvini as a junior coalition partner. And naturally, Berlusconi. Berlusconi is also a question mark, I would say. Berlusconi is another big personality. I mean, all of them are big egos, big personalities. And Berlusconi clearly wants to be the kingmaker within the coalition. So I think that she will have to overcome a number of challenges, not just externally speaking, but also within her own coalition, especially considering that this is going to be a very, very harsh winter for Italy and for Europe in general, with the energy crisis, with the cost of living going up, and a lot of room for perhaps contestation inside and outside of the coalition.
Andrea, if we look at the pattern of Italian elections over the last few years, it does seem to be kind of waves of popularity for anti-establishment parties. There was Matteo Salvini's League a few years ago, and then the Five Star Movement before that. But each one of them just kind of fizzled away. Do you expect a similar thing to continue here? Is this just the next wave?
It's possible because, I mean, these votes are going up and down. But as my colleague was saying, here we're not talking about a movement like the Five Star suddenly gaining votes from everywhere in the political system. We are talking about, as she was saying, an internal job, in the sense that Meloni is taking these votes from her allies. It is possible that, you know, in terms of surveys, they will lose votes ahead. But at the end of the day, what matters is essentially the fact that they have a majority. So they will not lose those MPs over the legislature, which means that they can change things even if surveys are going down. So it's possible that there will be problems. It's possible that, you know, like there will be people doing fascist salutes in the party and even key militants doing this type of things, and they will be caught and there will be scandals and so on. But, you know, like having a governmental crisis is a much more complex issue, and it will also depend on the international, setting.
Peter Klepper, do you fear that Italy could go the same direction as Poland or Hungary? And I mention those two countries because these are countries in where the far-right governments have not only been consistently popular, but they've been accused of backsliding on democracy and changing the system to suit them. There's a fear that a similar situation might happen with Meloni, particularly that she's been she's had a lot of good things to say about Viktor Orban, the leader of Hungary.
Well, at least if you ask the Commission President, Ms. Ursula von der Leyen, she found it necessary this week to sort of threaten Italy with the Poland-Hungary treatment. She said if the vote doesn't go the right way, we have certain tools, quote-unquote, at our disposition. I mean, I would not say that's a very smart thing to say just before a democratic election coming from a non-elected European Commission official. You know, at the European Union level, often, of course, you have these attempts to try to, you know, contribute to a better rule of law environment in countries where indeed there are problems, in Poland and Hungary. You know, there's many problems with that. The first thing is, of course, that you have often the risk of double standards. Nobody ever talks about Romania, Bulgaria, but there we have very serious problems with the rule of law, but because of political reasons, these countries sort of can escape, you know, the EU criticism. Also, I would say it's very strange that indeed you have these problems in Poland and Hungary, but actually sometimes also in Italy. You know, when the European Recovery Fund was agreed, senior officials of the Italian justice system were warning that organized crime was going to be ready to try to, you know, rip off a lot of that money. That's already the problem with a lot of EU spending. So I would say if the European Union is so concerned about the rule of law in certain member states, in organized crime, getting their hands on all that money, perhaps they should, reducing these funds. But there, you know, when we're talking about that, then, you know, the EU institutions are never that enthusiastic because, of course, they're very keen on those funds.
I'm just going to give what's probably going to be the last word on this to Cecilia. It's worth remembering as well that Italian governments generally don't have a long life if the last 30 years is anything to go by. Apparently, the average government lasts 20 months. Do you expect what are the prospects for this one? You expect the same thing to continue here?
Well, actually, they have a chance to be more stable compared to other coalitions because, for one thing, they are much more homogeneous, for instance, than the last majorities, the last coalitions that Italy saw in power. So that's one factor of strength. If I can just add something about, EU conditionality and disbursement of funds, I think that the problem with the COVID, the recovery plan in general was that it was an emergency situation. There was no room, really. There was no time to negotiate, conditionality for Italy or other countries. And let's remember that Italy was the first country to be very hardly hit. And Italy also experienced a lack of solidarity by large member states at the beginning of the pandemic, right? When Germany and France, for instance, stopped the exports of protective equipment to other EU member states. So the European Union was very, very concerned about restoring its image as an actor that can intervene with a positive impact in crisis. I think that explains what the colleague was saying before about the lack of a conditionality.
And on that, we're going to have to leave it. Thank you very much to all three of you, Cecilia, Emma Sottilotta, Peter Klepp and Andrea Mamone. Thanks very much for being on Inside Story. And thank you, as always, for watching. Remember, you can see the program again anytime. Just go to our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. And from me, Hazem Seeker, and the whole team here, bye for now.